FTN Fast Break Podcast, Monday, December 30th, 2024, episode 33. What is going on, everybody? Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kawhisenberg DFS, joined once again by my co-host. It's Mike Randall. You can find him on Twitter at RandallRant. Mike, it's been a few weeks, man. How you been? How's the holidays treating you?
It's been great, brother. Great to have you back again. Killing it as always with your props. Amazing stuff. Don't give Zach Graham time to actually stare and absorb over the holiday break, because he will come out with dominant performance, which you did, my friend. Well done. Great things on the hardwood in the NBA. Things are rounding into shape. And Zach, I would be remiss if I did not mention, I took a look at the double dribble team that I drafted with you. I am somehow in first, only because my team has avoided injuries, and I follow the lead of Kawhisenberg, and I took Wemby, and the Wemby Carl Anthony Towns duo, obviously, has been doing quite well. So, knock on wood, I know the injuries are coming, and you are not far behind, my friend, but I was dead and buried, but it seems to I've gotten back to at least made this interesting with the great Kawhisenberg, which is nice.
Yeah, like to see that. I'll have to check in on that league as well.
You'll be ahead of me soon, I'm sure. Sure.
We'll see, man. That Wemby Towns pairing. That's
good.
That ain't too bad. And speaking of pairings, we did have a trade. So let's jump into this, because I think since we last convened here, Adam and myself on Thursday, you know, we did a recap of the Christmas Day slate. Minimal, not a very eventful weekend, but this I think was kind of the news of the week. The Los Angeles Lakers have traded D'Angelo Russell, Maxwell Lewis, and three of their own second-round picks to the Brooklyn Nets in exchange for Dorian Finney-Smith and Shake Milton. So, of course, Finney-Smith shooting a career-high 43.5% from three. The Lakers do need shooting. And clearly, J.J. Redick was not a fan of D'Angelo Russell. So D'Angelo Russell out. Shake Milton now a part of this Lakers backcourt. Mike, I'll toss it to you first. What are your thoughts on this deal? Happened Sunday morning, just distracting us from our season-long fantasy football championships.
As you know, Dr. Graham, I am not a fan of J.J. Redick, but I will tell you that I think this was a very smart move. D'Angelo Russell never fit to me with what the Lakers are trying to do. Super talented guy, can get hot, can stretch the defense, is not a great defender. And look at his field goal percentage the last 3 years, 48, 45, 41. It's going the wrong way. Has become too isolation for me. His three-point percentage is down to 33%. It just doesn't seem to fit with a team. 18 and 13, a little bit up and down this year, but this trade helps them, makes them better. DFS is a winning player. You saw it with Dallas. He can defend. He can sit in the corner and hit threes. So I think this was a net positive for the Lakers here. Nothing against D'Angelo Russell. He can get hot and have remarkable games, just never seem to fit. You know, they have AD. They have LeBron. Austin Reeves has played really well lately. It didn't seem like it worked for me. So I think this is a positive, as much as it pains me to give credit to the Lakers and J.J. Redick.
Yeah, and I think too, like outside of the, I think the obvious, right? Like, does Dorian Finney-Smith make this Lakers team now a true contender in the West? Probably not for me, but I do think, again, kind of to your point, it's a net positive.
Net positive.
And, yeah. And it could be a really sly move if Shake Milton is able to kind of outplay Gabe Vincent, and Vincent has not set the bar high for himself this year, but Russell out of there, you do need, this is still a team that has been hurting for, you know, kind of true point guard play as Russell has fallen out of favor. So Shake Milton, I think, has the opportunity of his lifetime here to make a big impact on this Lakers team, insert himself into this Los Angeles rotation, and potentially get himself a bigger contract once he's up for one. And I know Dorian Finney-Smith, if we're talking contract, player option next year, $15.3 million. So I don't know whether or not he would snap pick that up or not. It may come down to his performance here with the Lakers. But I think I'm in agreement with you where, like, I do think that overall this is a good thing on paper for LA.
I'm a big fan, Zach, of putting people in roles. It's because I'm an old man and I grew up with the Pistons beating the Lakers way back in the early 2000s. And most basketball fans besides yourself cannot name anyone on that team besides Ben Wallace, Rip Hamilton, Torian Prince. We can go on. But everyone had a role. And this fits better to the ancillary roles that the Lakers need their players to play than having D'Angelo Russell. You mentioned gives him a little bit of cap space possibly too. Net positive. Is this going to put him over the hump? No, I don't think so. But it's an incremental step in the right direction.
Yeah, replacing Max Christie, who has been the fifth guy in this Lakers starting group over the last couple weeks, replacing him with Dorian Finney-Smith, you keep the shooting and you upgrade the defense. So we'll see how that plays out. On the Brooklyn side, from a wide view, I don't know how much more you're getting for Dorian Finney-Smith, but it would be a mistake for us to completely ignore the reports that were kind of flooding the NBA Twitter late Saturday, which was indicating that the Memphis Grizzlies were closing in on acquiring Dorian Finney-Smith for a package that included a very heavily protected first-round pick and either John Conchar or Luke Kennard. That was the word. But for the Lakers to come in and swoop in, it makes me think that highly protected first was like the Nets probably viewed that as something that was never going to convey. Or at least for a first, right? And maybe that was going to convey, if it didn't come as a first round pick, maybe it turned into 2 seconds. So getting 3 seconds here from the Lakers, it makes some sense to me with, again, not having the full knowledge of that Memphis package, but it did feel like the Lakers kind of saw that report and swooped in here to pick up Finney-Smith. But the Nets, my understanding, I like to think of myself as a salary cap expert, but with the changes with the new CBA, mm-hmm. the second apron hitting this year, I'm pretty certain that D'Angelo Russell can be dealt once again. So maybe this is kind of a double dip for the Nets where D'Angelo Russell, you get the picks back with him, and then you can send him out for some more draft capital before February's deadline. And I would not be shocked, as long as they are allowed to by rule, to see him sent out again, if there is a team that's needy in their backcourt for somebody who wants to go out there and chuck up a bunch of shots. So maybe they can't get something done in that fashion. But I do think that is something we should consider when assessing this from a Brooklyn point of view.
Yeah, and Zach, listen, they have to sell tickets. Don't forget there's a business side of this. We've seen this in the other leagues as well. Starting lineup potentially for the Nets, I would think. D'Angelo Russell, Cam Thomas, Cam Johnson, Clowney and Claxton, maybe something like that. That's a decent team. It's an exciting team. They can score. They're 12-20. I get it. You don't want to bottom out, but Russell will have the ability to put points up if he stays with the Nets in this situation. So it makes sense for both teams. I agree with you, though. I don't know if this is the final stop for D'Lo. I don't.
Right. And maybe Russell does stay, because I think we should expect a guy like Cam Johnson to get sold on here before the deadline in return for, again, more draft capital than they were able to secure in this trade. I think one thing I feel very certain of is that this roster is still very much in flux on the Brooklyn side of things here. And like for D'Angelo Russell, man, like I don't know the complete map, I guess, right? I have the technology here, so we might as well pull up his player page over on Basketball Reference, but mm-hmm. he's been with the Nets before. He's had 2 stops with the Lakers. I think he's had at least one with the Wolves and one with the Warriors. So like, is he going to get traded to the Warriors next? Or the Wolves, rather? The Wolves do need some guard help there, as Mike Conley begins to fade into the background. Again, still their starting guard, but like, this is a guy who already spent 2 years in Brooklyn, right? As a rookie, 2 years with the Lakers, then his year with the Warriors, then to Minnesota, then back to LA, now back to Brooklyn. I don't know if the saga of D'Angelo Russell continues, but I have to imagine he will be, from a basketball perspective, not a winning and losing perspective, but from an individual standpoint, the way we know he likes to play, I think he might be a little bit more happy in this Brooklyn scenario where he can go throw up 20 shots a night and the Nets aren't going to say boo because they're trying to lose games.
No, you know, that's it. That's the situation. And he is happier there. He needs to be in that sort of environment in order to succeed. There's a place for him. It just wasn't on the Lakers. That's all. Yeah.
So the first of what you would think would be many moves between now and February's trade deadline. The other thing that was really popping off in the association this weekend, Mike, fights, fisticuffs everywhere. And like, I don't know. I haven't looked at the foul statistics from the games between the 26th and now. But we know that on Christmas Day, the foul counts went down, right? And the ratings went up. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if we have now made the move that we saw the league make after the All-Star break last year, where they're letting guys play more physical, they're taking those foul numbers on a game-by-game basis downwards, right? That means more physical play. And if the guys out there are not used to that anymore, and now all of a sudden we're letting them play, I could see that maybe factoring in here. Now, some of the guys who are involved here are generally hotheads. The first fight we had, Najee Marshall and Yusuf Nurkic get into it in their game. I believe that was on Friday. It may have been on Thursday. But the important things you need to know, right? Those guys are chirping. They kind of square off. Yusuf Nurkic kind of brushes Najee Marshall in the face. And Najee Marshall responds with just a full-on swing, caught Nurk in the ear. Luckily, did not connect directly with his face. We would have been seeing a much longer suspension than what we got. Yusuf Nurkic actually ends up on his butt because as he's being held back by teammates, PJ Washington comes in defense of Najee Marshall and gives him a little shove. So all is said and done in that altercation, Mike. 4-game suspension for Najee Marshall, 3-game suspension for Yusuf Nurkic, and the 1 game that's already been served for PJ Washington. So it's been a while since we had like an actual fight, and this very much was one, even though we didn't get, you know, fist to face.
Several things. First, I'd like to thank PJ Washington for developing into this sort of enforcer as he tries to prove my PJ Washington greater than Zion Williamson take when they came out of college. But he has become like this enforcer guy, which is great. Number two, Zach, I grew up with the fights. I love the fights. I mean, Kurt Rambis McHale's when I was like barely getting into basketball, like that's normal. That was a regular foul. Look at it. That was not a flagrant foul. It was wonderful. So listen, everything you're saying is true. Number one, we want to see more flow. And the college game is suffering from this. Zach, the idea that a hard foul doesn't exist anymore in any level is crazy. You're going to the basket. We're playing 3-on-3. I don't want you to score. I'm going to foul you. That is done intentionally, but it is not an intentional foul. I'm not smacking you in the face. I'm hitting you in the arms, and I'm making sure you don't make it. But somehow on college, and now it's leaking into NBA, that has become a flagrant. It needs to be reviewed. It's killing the product. So to your point about the Christmas games, I think they swallowed the whistle a little bit and let them play. Players will adjust. Now, whenever these fights happen, I love to think about if it wasn't stopped, who would have won? Najee Marshall is minus 250 to win that fight, in my opinion, because he's ready to go. The second one you get to, in a minute, I think is going to be interesting, but I'm fine with it. They will adjust. Hard fouls are part of basketball. There's a reason for – there's a cheap shot, and there's a hard foul. And I love PJ Washington jumping in. And did you see Kyrie's face, by the way? That was the other thing. Kyrie just staring blankly at the whole thing. Like, he's never seen a fight before. But, like, that was great. Yeah, I enjoy it, Zach. I don't enjoy violence. But that's going to happen when you let them play, and you need to let them play because the game is better then. That's my point.
Yeah, look, as long as nobody gets hurt from it.
Right, again, like, of course.
It can be healthy for these guys.
Healthy, right.
You know, competing game in and game out. And the last thing I'll say on that fight is I thought it was very, very entertaining to see that Najee Marshall went after the game and changed his Twitter, you know, cover picture to him punching Nurkic in the face.
I loved it.
So then on Sunday, we have Amen Thompson and Tyler Hero getting into it. And this, like, wasn't so much of a fight as just Amen Thompson kind of throwing a fit. These guys get into it late in the fourth quarter. Houston, or Miami rather, pulling away with about 35 seconds to go. This was on a dead ball. These guys come together. And I actually saw some people commenting that specifically Mark Davis, the official, did not do it in these fans' eyes, did not do his job well enough to kind of keep the peace in this game. But these guys come together. Amen Thompson ends up grabbing Tyler Hero's jersey with both hands and basically throwing him down to the ground, like pretty damn aggressively. Mm-hmm. So I think we will see a multi-game suspension for Amen Thompson handed down either today or tomorrow on Tuesday. Tyler Hero, I'm not sure. He did kind of, he went in there and like locked up with Amen on the dead ball, but no swings. And he's the one who ends up on the ground rather aggressively. So we'll see if Hero gets a suspension, but he did get the last laugh because not only did the Heat pull off the win over the Rockets, but there's the video of him during that review looking at Amen Thompson, laughing and saying, "You're going home, bro. You lost." So again, two fights in like 3 days in the NBA, guys ending up on the ground, suspensions being handed out. The holiday season, Mike, I guess Festivus time.
Festivus, the rest of us. The trash talk of Tyler Hero is inversely proportional to how I think that fight would go. Love the Tyler Hero trash talk. A lot of bouncing from Tyler Hero and Amen Thompson. The more bouncing you do, the less you want to fight, in my opinion. Like, yeah. Najee Marshall just goes straight at you. Like, there's no issue. It reminds me with the Knicks of Charles Oakley. You know, Barkley and Oakley used to go back and forth. There was a chasm of difference between Barkley fighting and Oakley. Oakley would make a beeline and would literally put you through a wall. No discussion. There's no posturing. You know, Hero's bouncing a little bit back and forth, but trash talk by Hero, well done. For a Heat team that needs it, they got a lot of stuff going on with Butler and all the other things. So, nice win for Miami here. But I like a good fight, Zach, especially over the holidays.
Well, and like, I don't think we talked about it on the fast break, but like 10 days ago, we had Ron Holland and Jordan Clarkson squaring off, like putting the Dukes up.
Who would you take there? I would take Clarkson. Am I wrong?
I lean Clarkson, but like Holland was the one who initiated. Like,
true.
He put his fists up first. So like maybe Ron Holland is like, maybe he's the sleeper there. But like, I don't know, man. Like whatever's gotten into these guys, I'm a fan of it. Again, as long as nobody gets hurt, like I enjoy the aggressive competition there. So. Yeah. Next up, just real quick, this is a little bit of nonsense, but there are numbers behind this, and we talked about it about a month ago with the early returns from the wall in the Intuit Dome, right? The Clippers' new arena. So we got some statistical updates for the wall. Opposing teams are still shooting a league-worst free throw percentage on the wall end of the Intuit Dome, and now expanding that out to opposing teams' three-point percentages, now shooting 33.3% on that end, which would be 27th in the league. So I guess my question is, did Steve Ballmer make a mistake in not building two walls in the Intuit Dome?
Yeah, the Intuit Dome, that's a big deal, and it's even leaked over to college because one of the plays over the break was UCLA-Gonzaga at the Intuit Dome. And that worked to the under, no problem. With 65-62, Zach, and there were a million fouls in the last 2 minutes. So the fact that it stayed under was a miracle. And Gonzaga, the visitor, really having a problem. 7 of 24 from three-point range for a team that shoots really well. And UCLA, who's had some more experience or closer by, goes 12 of 24 from three-point range. And Zach, for UCLA to shoot 12 of 24, I mean, that's the equivalent of, I don't even know what to tell you, like a hippopotamus winning 100. It just doesn't happen. but like, so it's real. It's a big deal. It hurt him on the free throws as well. I don't know. Nembhard missed a free throw that would have tied it late in the game. I don't know if that was at the wall or not. It's a good question. But that for sure, it's affecting the NBA. It's affecting everyone there. It's an advantage. You deal with it. You deal with it, Zach, as if you know with the Boston Garden in the 80s, which are the squares you can't bounce on because they were dead. Bird and McHale, he's talking about it all the time. It's home court advantage. You deal with it. And if it works, go with it, Ballmer. Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Interesting to hear that the college anecdote there from games in the Intuit Dome. Looking ahead at the schedule for the early parts of this week, I guess one thing, looking even further ahead, over the next 3 weeks, we have every single day at least 5 and up to, I believe, 11 NBA games every single day. So now that we have passed NBA Christmas, we have passed the NBA Cup and kind of those bye weeks that are mixed in there, so to speak, with the knockout rounds. Now we're getting into these teams having, you know, 4 games in 6 nights, or the Thunder are just now coming out of, I believe, an 8-game in 14-night stretch. So for us fans, it's great. I think we're going to see more and more guys taking some rests, right? Maybe we've got a little bit of ankle soreness tonight. Player A sits out, things of that nature. But from our viewing standpoint, tonight on Monday, the game that I want to tune into the most tonight is Cleveland at Golden State. Golden State still floundering a little bit here, right? They've been dropping in those Western Conference standings. The Cavaliers still, like, we maybe just as the basketball, the NBA fans as a collective around the world, maybe we're not talking enough about the Cavs, because, Mike, we are now, what, like a third of the way through the season. The Cavaliers still have the best record in the NBA and a 4.5 game gap in the East. So out there on the West Coast, we know East Coast teams going West can be an extra little challenge. So Cavs at Warriors here tonight. Cavs 4.5 point road favorites. That's the game I'm eyeing here on Monday.
Zach, I'm buying in. I'm in. I think the Cavs have what it takes this year to win a championship. I totally believe in them. 27-4. They're 10-3 away. They've only lost the one game at home. They're scoring. The defense is always fantastic. They hit a little rut, if you want to call it a rut for them. And they, how do they respond? They go 9-1 in their last 10. I believe in them. I absolutely think they're a matchup nightmare. They have the bigs. They have the shooting. They have the depth. The players coming off the bench. Everyone in a role. Everything is clicking here for them. Totally believe in them. Brilliant job by the Cavs. I'm watching this one as well because I am selling the Warriors. I think it's over. I know it's dangerous to bury a team like that. It's been an incredible dynasty, but I expect the Cavs to win this game, and I am all in on this game. I love the Cavs. I was hesitant. We were saying, but it's the Cavs. They're 10-0, but it's the Cavs. You know what, guys? They're good. They're legitimately good, and they can make a run very deep, if not for the whole thing. I have given up because I'm just so impressed with how they're doing, what it takes to win, and they're consistent. They have a style. They play to their style, and they have depth, and everyone knows their roles. And yes, I love Ty Jerome. All of that is fine. I believe in the Cavs.
Yeah, I think now it's like, it's not, but it's the Cavs. It should be now. It's the Cavs. Like, yes. This is one of, if not the best team in the league right yes. now. Again, I think I would still take Boston or OKC, but they very much belong in the upper echelon the here yep. of the association on Tuesday night. There's a number of games, right? Like, I will be at Clippers at Spurs. Box seats, nice. A little humble brag.
Whoa!
unfortunate, Mike, that of course I'm 5 days, I'm going to be 4 days too early. Kawhi Leonard making his debut on the 4th. Of January. And so there's that game that I'll be at. Memphis and Phoenix, Cleveland, right? If we're talking about, it's the Cavs, they take on the Lakers on Tuesday night as well. But the game that I really want to watch, and I will have to watch the replay since I'll be at the Spurs game, Wolves at Thunder. Give me that all day, every day. I know the Wolves have not been the team that we expected, certainly not to the standard that we were holding them coming out of last season. And their postseason run that they made, but like Wolves at Thunder, to me, that's the game of the night on Tuesday.
Yeah, I agree. It is. And the kudos to the Thunder for getting through this time where they didn't have their full complement of players. Hartenstein's come back. He's averaging what, Zach? He's averaging about 30 minutes a game. He's giving you the double-doubles. He had a streak of 6 straight double-doubles broken against Memphis because they blew him out. That's the only reason he didn't play. I love it. I was shocked, and we'll get to this later, that the Thunder lost the Bucks for the NBA Cup. It's fine, but they are for real, and the players are coming in their own, and you're seeing it. They weathered the storm, and that's a sign of a great team that we can look up, Zach, after they lost some players and they were concerned and we weren't sure how they were going to do. And you look around, they're 26-5. That is a sign of a great team.
Yeah, winners of 11 straight regular season games, of course, dropped that NBA Cup title game. Like you mentioned, 26-5, now a 5-game buffer on the rest of the West. Big Wednesday slate. The one that I'm eyeing here, when the Texas Triangle pops up, I'm watching it. Mavs at Rockets. Rockets 21-11. They have lost two straight, but sitting just a half game out of the 2 seed there in the West. Mavericks, of course, no Luka Doncic, so trying to hold on. They're just a game behind the Rockets. So this is a big game for the standings, especially as the Mavericks try to buoy themselves without their best player. So give me the Texas Triangle matchup there. Mavs at Rockets on Wednesday.
Yeah, and I love the Rockets are another team. They're like a mini Cavaliers that we haven't been able to buy into. 21-11, great on defense, 6-4 in their last 10, and have avoided those long losing streaks here. So I love me some Memphis Grizzlies, but if you look in the Southwest, the Rockets are right there. This is a good matchup, a game Houston should get.
All right, let's close out episode 33 with our stock up and stock downs. We'll start with the stock downs here, Mike. So what do you got here on episode 33?
Yeah, I'm disappointed with Jimmy Butler. I get the whole thing, and he certainly has earned the right to demand a trade and things like that. But, you know, Jimmy, you were a player who had a bad sort of rap that he, you know, he was quitting on teams and taking his shoes off on the bench, really found a home in Miami. And I get it. I mean, he wants to go to a contender, but it just doesn't sit right with me, Zach. It bothers me. I get it. This is the way the players are. But, Jimmy, you sort of changed the narrative on your career from a malcontent player to really a go-to late-game scorer. You take an 8 seed all the way to the finals. It just doesn't sit right. I get it, but it seems like the, you know, if it's going to end, it always ends badly. I get it. And it started to end badly, and it's bothering me because for a long time, that was a special group in there in Miami.
Yeah. And I think the back and forth too, just to add on to that, between Pat Riley, Jimmy, through right. the media, Jimmy's agent, right, with Shams, yeah. like all the stuff that's surrounding it. It's just definitely not helping the Heat. And like, however Jimmy may feel about the franchise at this point, doesn't change what they've done together.
That's
and
correct.
Also what Pat Riley and that team have done for Jimmy in his career.
That's right? correct.
Like they did pay him this current contract that he's on of over $50 million next year on his player option. So my stock down is actually the Warriors. You talked about them a few minutes ago, thinking that like, right, the window is over and like they may be a team where Jimmy Butler ends up, but they're my stock down this week, Mike, because they have not been able to, and so maybe Steve Kerr is my stock down, but as an organization, they have not figured out how to make Jonathan Kuminga work. And I think that is just a big knock to this team. Like, they have not been able to develop this guy into somebody that Coach Kerr feels comfortable with playing big minutes on a consistent basis. But like, you see it when it happens, when he gets the opportunity. Here's three of his last four games against the Pacers on the 23rd, 9 of 16 from the floor in his 30 minutes, 26, 8, and 4 with a block, just one turnover. Then down game on Christmas, just 4 of 10 against the Lakers in his 28 minutes. I don't believe he started that game, though. I don't believe he started any of those games. Plays 37 minutes off the bench against the Clippers on the 27th. I don't know, Mike, just 11 of 19 from the field, 11 of 14 from the free throw line, 34 and 10 double-double, 5 assists, 3 stocks, and then last night again off the bench against the Suns in a win, 34 points, 9 boards, 3 assists, and a steal. Is Jonathan Kuminga a max contract type of player? No, I'm not going to make that argument, but he's better than what they have figured out to do with him to this point of his career, and for that, stock down.
Zach, it is a brilliant point. I struggle with players like Kuminga across every sport. I still believe, honestly, it's better when you get to the pros to be great at one specific thing because that leads to sustained success. I agree with everything you're saying, but there's something in the back of my head that's saying if they can't figure it out, who would be able to figure it out? That's my concern. Immense talent. Love watching him play. Dynamic player. Young. I agree. It's a stock down situation, but I don't know if I'm ready to blame everyone yet because I don't know. Like, if he's on the Bucks, are they unlocking his potential? I don't think so. So maybe it takes a special situation. But to your point, I also doubted Chet Holmgren. I was wrong about that. So maybe you're right in that he just needs the right situation and Golden State may not be it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Maybe it's not a Golden State situation. Maybe it's more on Kuminga himself. But the past few games sure have been impressive, both from the eye test and in the box score. Let's close out episode 33 with our stock ups. What do you got?
So stock up for me is the Bucks. And I have doubted the Bucks, and I doubted the whole thing with Doc, but they performed very well in the NBA Cup. And it has changed my mind, Zach. If the pairing between Lillard and Giannis really came together, Middleton slowly getting back in, he's missed a lot of time. Can he bring it together for the playoffs? I'm going to contradict myself, but do I think they can make a run and beat the Cavs? Yes, I do. You've put hope back in me, Milwaukee. Congratulations on a run I never thought you'd make. You have to translate it over to the regular season now and stop being so inconsistent. But I was impressed with Giannis, who was dominant. I was impressed with Lillard, who showed he could coexist working Batman and Robin with Giannis flipping, depending on late game or whatever. So stock up to me for the Bucks. I'm late on this, but of course, it's been a couple of weeks. Great job with them winning the NBA Cup. I did not think it could happen. I picked the Thunder minus the 5, dead wrong. They dominated from start to finish. Good job by Milwaukee.
Yeah, now sitting in the sixth seed out east, right? So, like, the crisis to this point has been averted. Let's see how they can continue to climb. Looks like they're going to start getting these guys back. Dame returned from a multi-game absence. Mm-hmm. Last time out, Giannis practiced here this morning on Monday. He's been out three straight games. So they have lost two straight, but still, right, they were 16-12. So
yes.
I think a good point by you. And then I'll close it out. My stock up is just the Knicks. Like, after a bit of a slow start, they are now 22-10. They are winners of seven straight games. They are just a game behind the Celtics for the two seed in the East. So, like, now looking at this, these Eastern Conference standings, like, we still have the Bucks and the Sixers, who are not exactly where we would have expected. And the Cavs are up in that one spot. They are still the surprise. But the Knicks, now we've kind of evened out. This is what we expected. Contending with the Celtics, similar records. They're a game back now. So I think we are setting up for what could end up being, for lack of a better term, a photo finish between the Cavs, the Celtics, and the Knicks. So stock up for New York. And they get to take on the Wizards again tonight in back-to-back games. So that'll help your record.
Yeah, it certainly will. And it makes for really exciting matchups in the East. We have a chance when we get to the playoffs to get down to the Final Four to have some epic, epic matchups if things break right. Kudos to them, of course. Everything better, whether you like it or not, when the Knicks are good, because it just creates that environment of hate or love, depending on what side you're on here. Great call, Zach.
Well, and the next time we convene, we will be in 2025. So happy new year to you, sir. Happy new year to everybody tuned in and listening. Anything else for you, Mike, before we shut it down?
No, that's it. It's been a great 2024. You are pulling triple duty here with all the charting and all the working you're doing behind the scenes. Our NBA product has never been in better hands, and that's a direct result of Zach Graham. So really excited for what we have for subs and everyone else headed into 2025.
All right, everybody. Have a happy new year. We'll see you back here on Thursday, myself and Adam, for another episode of the Fast Break podcast. Enjoy the beginning of your week. We'll do the same. Till then, he's Mike, and I'm Zach. Bye-bye.